Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, February 2nd, 2023. Allegations of misconduct emerge against resigned PMDD leaders by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio. Last Wednesday, around 24 community members attended a meeting of the Presidio Municipal Development District, many armed with allegations against the board's former executive director and president. Their complaints ran the gamut from financial misconduct to personal smears and threats. It was the latest in a series of tense public meetings about the organization's future, which have yielded an array of explosive allegations about misconduct within the city of Presidio. PMDD was thrown into tumult 2 weeks ago when the board's president, Terry Bishop, and executive director, Jaron Stevens, abruptly resigned with a searing joint statement alleging wide-ranging corruption at all levels of city government, painting a scathing portrait of the city of Presidio, including their own board, as riddled with cronyism, nepotism, and disregard for ethical behavior at all levels. In turn, PMDD members and local business owners alike brought their own accusations against the former leaders. PMDD is an organization dedicated to economic development in Presidio. Formerly known as the Presidio Development Corporation, the board became PMDD in 2012 with the help of the state legislature. The legislature designated PMDD as a taxing entity that skims 0.5% in local sales tax for the purpose of financing development projects beneficial to the district, which are voted on by board members. Both the organization's bylaws and Texas law governing development districts are relatively vague on what their funding may be used for, though the board has generally focused their efforts on growing local business and improving quality of life for Presidians. In their resignation letter, Bishop and Stevens alleged they had been thwarted by the city in their efforts to bring business and jobs to Presidio, as well as their personal investigation into local corruption. They felt they were personally hindered by their own board members and continued interference by outside sources, who they accused of violating executive session confidentiality and colluding with the city secretary to interfere with their investigative efforts. Last week's PMDD meeting had originally been called so that a performance review of Stevens could take place in executive session, roughly a year and a half after she was hired to lead the Economic Development Board. Neither Bishop nor Stevens attended Wednesday's meeting, but board members and their neighbors still took the opportunity to respond to their resignation letter. Questions arise over filling of vacancies. The drama began at a January 16th Presidio City Council meeting when the Bishop and Stevens, then still president and executive director, pleaded with council to fill two positions so that they could have a quorum for important upcoming board business. Council ultimately tabled their request after a heated disagreement about how to properly appoint new PMDD members, during which questions arose regarding the truth of Bishop and Stevens' claims around the request. PMDD board members serve for 2 years, typically corresponding with the spring election cycle, but there are often vacancies that need to be filled and officially approved by City Council. Bishop's term was set to expire in the spring, along with the term of Board Treasurer Nancy Arevalo. Stevens had said the rush to turn over the board was to complete important PMDD business involving a company interested in setting up shop in Presidio, But when Councilmember and PMDD Treasurer Arevalo asked for more information about the company that was interested in Presidio, Stevens hesitated. City Administrator Pablo Rodriguez told the Presidio International that he was not able to confirm the name of the company or even the type of business involved. "Nobody showed up at our doorstep after her resignation," he said. Stevens and Bishop said that there were three additional seats that would eventually need to be filled, claiming that Board Secretary Lizette Rojana had resigned in October, and members Christina Juarez and Patrick Manyan resigned shortly after. As it turned out, neither Juarez nor Manyan tendered their resignations with the city. That Friday, council called a special meeting to consider applications for the unfilled positions. Before open session, but while the city's cameras were rolling, Bishop and Stevens resigned. Their shocking resignation letter, it turned out, would open the floodgates for accusations regarding their leadership of PMDD. Local business owners accused former executive director of misconduct. Board member Manyan led Wednesday's meeting and fielded concerns with the help of Secretary Rojana, reinstated by Presidio City Council just after Bishop and Stevens' resignation, as well as Treasurer Arevalo and Board Member Juarez. H. Cowan, the consultant who brought Maquilladora Solitaire Homes to Presidio in Ojinaga, led with searing criticism of both Stevens and her board. He suggested that they had failed so miserably at fulfilling their charter that they ought to disband the organization. "You haven't brought jobs here that I've seen. The slice of sales tax that you get should go back to the city," he said. In their resignation letter, Bishop and Stevens claimed that each new attempt to bring new jobs to town had been met with resistance and personal judgments about the type of business or type of work being created. Coach Robert Romero, Alex Jimenez, and Omega Jimenez of Presidio Drag Racing attended the meeting to share their side of a conflict with Stevens ahead of the 4th of July races. Stevens had approached the organizers weeks before the races to request proof of general liability and race day insurance, safety regulations posted in English and Spanish, and past due payment of their lease. She said that the races would have to be canceled if the organizers couldn't provide the necessary documentation, citing safety concerns that could leave her organization liable in the event of an accident. Presidio Drag Racing ultimately met Stevens' conditions, but not before an explosive conflict. Romero and the Jimenez's accusations against Stevens ranged from an abuse of power to name-calling. They alleged that Stevens had threatened to call the police on them and harassed them via text message. Romero said that the drag races, which draw folks from Mexico and all over the Southwest and regularly sell hundreds of tickets, invest their earnings in track improvements and giving back to the community. Competitors pack local hotels and restaurants, and the group hosts fun events for the community. In the spring, they'll be using the track to spotlight the high school's Solar Car Challenge prototype. For now, they're not officially recognized by the state of Texas as a nonprofit organization, but they're exploring their options as the races grow beyond informal contests between local friends. "I'm not a lawyer, but I know what's right for the community," said Romero. "I feel like Stevens was bullying me." Omega Jimenez didn't hedge on her organization's right to conduct business in the industrial park without interference. "This is our tax money," she said. "I've lived in Presidio all my life. I'm going to die here. No outsider is going to come here and tell us how to spend our money." Accusations of financial misconduct. The Presidio International Drag Strip is located in the Presidio Industrial Park, which had been purchased by PMDD's predecessor organization, the Presidio Development Corporation, in 1999. The corporation no longer exists, but is still listed as the park's landowner. The question of the land's ownership had been the subject of a crusade waged by Bishop and Stevens, who believed ownership would revert to the state of Texas unless action was taken. That crusade and other causes taken up by the resigned PMDD leaders are now tethered to claims that Bishop and Stevens racked up excessive legal fees without board input in pursuit of their causes. In their resignation letter, Bishop and Stevens said they had been conducting an investigation to prove that Presidio Industrial Park truly belonged to PMDD before they attempted to lease more of it to prospective companies. They claimed ownership of the park was in danger of being reverted to the state of Texas due to incorrect titles and deeds dating back to 2021. In the letter, Stevens and Bishop also alleged potentially illegal real estate transactions benefiting previous board members in which PMDD literally gave them land for free, but did not specify which members. Investigation of this matter must be completed, their letter continues. This is not a fast or inexpensive process which any professional or anyone with business experience would comprehend. At last Wednesday's meeting, Treasurer Aravalo said that the board had originally budgeted $50,000 for legal consultation last year, but ended up more than doubling that number. I questioned Stevens about that and got a lot of pushback, she said. Aravalo had not yet received invoices for January 2023. Manion said that he and the rest of his board members never had contact with PMDD's attorneys at Brown Miller Law Group of Dallas before conflict among the board really ramped up. We requested to speak with them, and Stevens would find ways of pushing us off, he said. When we finally did get in touch with them, they were very willing to discuss things with us. Aravalo eventually started refusing to sign checks, which were signed by Bishop instead. The bylaws dictate that, though the treasurer is responsible for bookkeeping, PMDD checks may be written and cashed by any two board members. Many of the itemized legal expenses went to fighting a proposed diesel transport operation opposed by many Presidio residents, including Stevens. That was a very important issue, and she stood up, said Manion. The extent of it, I didn't realize until we saw the invoices. I didn't know a number until I saw that $80,000 had been spent. No discussion was had at a board meeting about these expenditures. Stevens' resignation was another source of bookkeeping headaches. In January, PMDD executive payroll ran in two pay periods from January 1st to 15th and 16th to 31st. Stevens was supposed to cash her check for the second half of January on the 31st, but cashed it on the 19th, the day she resigned. Aravalo said that there was another check written for Stevens' salary, intended to cover payroll from February 1st to 15th. That check was missing. I'm not saying it was signed, but it was missing, Aravalo said. That's totally unethical. The legal expenditures were not the only financial issue brought up by the board members. A smaller scale discrepancy. At their January and February 2022 meetings, Stevens repeatedly brought up the need for a more professional website for PMDD, featuring photos of the region and information about local businesses. It'll make a huge impact, she said at the board's meeting on February 9, 2022. At the same meeting, Stevens said that she had sought out bids across the region. She had also asked for a quote from a company in Nacogdoches that she had previously done business with. In the interest of transparency, she told the board of their long-standing relationship. Because of that relationship, the company, N Data Systems, offered a deal on their services. The board opted to contract with them, and a check for $6,000 was cashed on March 22, 2022. But at the time of Stephen's resignation, in January 2023, the website she had pushed for was still not finished. Board members say open communication was forbidden. Cowan put the blame on the remaining PMDD members for allowing Bishop and Stephen's alleged behavior to go unchecked. "If you knew and didn't stop her, you share some of the blame," he said. The board members defended themselves, saying that they were prevented from communicating with each other to cross-reference their concerns, which Stephens said violated the Open Meetings Act. Texas dictates that meetings of governmental bodies must be open to the public, except for authorized executive sessions, which are not open to the public. Valid reasons for enacting an executive session include discussing pending litigation with attorneys, certain types of real estate transactions, deliberating on hiring or firing employees, and evaluating allegations against individual government officials. Members of organizations subject to the Open Meetings Act are required to attend an hour-long online training. In their resignation letter, Stephens and Bishop said that only two of their board members had completed the training, but did not specify which ones. The law requires a court order to access official recordings of closed session discussion, but does not prevent closed session attendees from making public statements about those discussions or seeing each other socially, so long as they don't discuss official agenda items ahead of meetings in an attempt to influence each other's votes. Wiggle room in the Open Meetings Act doesn't mean that there won't be consequences for airing board business. The fact that a person may legally discuss what occurred in a closed meeting does not mean that it is advisable to do so, Zendia Thomas of the Texas Municipal League wrote in a guide to the law for elected officials. According to board member Juarez, Stephens insisted that any communication about board business between members had to be channeled through her. "She went even so far as to say we couldn't even talk to each other," she said. She would say, "If you have anything to say, you can say it to me, and I will disperse it to everyone else." It was really intense. Whether in open or closed session, PMDD bylaws dictate that anyone on the board can add agenda items if submitted to board leadership more than 5 days in advance of the meeting. Stephens was directing all communications through herself, explained Manian. She said that the board president, Terry Bishop, had to call meetings and that all agenda items had to be approved through him. In their resignation letter, Bishop and Stephens said that they felt many of the agenda items requested by their board members were trivial and contrary to the board's purpose. "This community needs to create real jobs and income opportunities before things like skate parks, gardens, river parks on private land, or expensive downtown offices." Stephens told Marfa Public Radio that she hadn't insisted that all communication go through her, simply that she had advised private discussion among members regarding PMDD business was against the law. Furthermore, she denied having removed submitted agenda items and approving expenditures that were not submitted by the board. Bishop and Stephens did not return multiple requests for comment from the Presidio International. Despite the many negative allegations made by board members, they also credited their former executive leadership with a series of accomplishments: a shade structure for the city's biggest playground, murals and new equipment at Daly Park and the Presidio Recycling Center, funding for local first responders and the staff at the daycare center, and the opening of a watermelon farm, providing seasonal opportunities for agricultural workers. Treasurer Rohana offered a personal apology to everyone gathered at the meeting. "I'm sorry to everyone who is upset about this," she said. "We want to move forward. We want to make this right." former Marfa and Valentine teacher sentenced to 20 years in prison on child porn charges. By Allegra Hobbs, A-L-L-E-G-R-A at BigBenSentinel.com. Alpine. Albert Ackley, a longtime Valentine ISD teacher who formerly taught in Marfa, was sentenced last week to 20 years in federal prison and 15 years of supervised release for distributing child pornography. Ackley pleaded guilty in August of last year to one count of distribution of child pornography. An additional count of distribution of child pornography and two counts of possession of child pornography were dismissed with prejudice, court records show, meaning they have been dismissed permanently. The plea agreement reached in August was sealed by the court. The Valentine local was arrested at his home in March of last year when authorities executed a search warrant and found multiple devices containing child sex abuse material. Court records state Ackley distributed 10 files containing child pornography over a messaging app. The case was investigated by both the Texas Department of Public Safety and Homeland Security investigations. This sentence shows that HSI special agents are laser-focused on doing our part to bring to justice those who victimize children, said Special Agent in Charge Francisco B. Barola of the Homeland Security Investigations El Paso Division. HSI is most appreciative of the collaborative partnership with the Texas Department of Public Safety that is a force multiplier to combat this horrific crime of child exploitation. Ackley, 59, was a Valentine ISD employee of 19 years at the time of his arrest in March. A math teacher for the district who taught students in grades 7 through 12, he resigned from the position days after his detainment. Nothing incriminating was found on school devices when authorities searched the building, per Superintendent Debbie Engel, and no victims associated with the school were identified. Prior to his employment in Valentine, Ackley had worked for Marfa ISD as a math, science, and computer teacher, then as the school district's technology coordinator. Ackley, upon his detainment, confessed to having sexual contact with children in the past, and authorities identified four possible juvenile victims altogether, two of whom had been victims of Ackley while in Marfa, according to the testimony of Texas DPS Special Agent Adam Patterson. According to Patterson's testimony, Ackley, then in his early 30s, told a victim in Marfa, who was a minor at the time, to completely undress in front of him, said Patterson. That victim was identified and interviewed by Patterson. Ackley also told authorities about another younger victim in Marfa he had encountered around the same time. Patterson said he had spoken to that victim, but that she said she did not recall the offense. Ackley also told DPS he had sexual contact with two female children when he was around 20 years old. One victim was 8 years old, and the other was 12 years old. The identification of those victims spawned a separate DPS investigation. The agency did not return an inquiry on the status of that investigation by press time. The United States Attorney's Office of the Western District of Texas released a statement upon Ackley's sentencing, pledging to vigorously prosecute such offenders. We will continue to vigorously prosecute those who distribute or create an illegal market for child pornography as they violate the sanctity and innocence of our children, said U.S. Attorney Jaime Esparza of the Western District of Texas. Four injured in cold weather multi-car pileup crash on I-10. By Allegra Hobbs, A-L-L-E-G-R-A at BigBenSentinel.com. Jeff Davis County. Four people were injured, one critically, when over 20 vehicles collided Tuesday morning in a series of mounting pileup crashes on I-10 west of Pecos due to icy roads. The initial crash occurred around 8:40 a.m. just west of the I-10-I-20 split in Jeff Davis County, according to the Texas Department of Public Safety, and involved at least 12 vehicles. A series of additional crashes happened as cars continued to collide into the existing pileups, per DPS spokesperson Sergeant Stephen Blanco. Over 20 vehicles altogether were involved in the incident. The incident remains under investigation by DPS. The roads were icy and conditions were foggy at the time of the crash, said Blanco, and weather is believed to have been a factor. Though the crash occurred in Jeff Davis County, it occurred on a six-mile stretch of the interstate that is serviced by Reeves County first responders. Jerry Bullard, director of emergency management for Reeves County, said slick roads were to blame and that the location of the crash is a consistent problem area for drivers in hazardous conditions. This is an area of incident every year, said Bullard. One person suffered critical injuries in the crash, said Bullard, while three suffered non-critical injuries. The patients were transported to Reeves Regional Health in Pecos. There have been no fatalities as a result of the crash. Though I-10 eastbound was closed throughout Tuesday as debris was cleared from the roadway, the left lane of the eastbound interstate was reopened that evening, and the roadway was entirely cleared and reopened as of Wednesday morning. Hazardous driving conditions persisted throughout the region on Wednesday. An ice storm warning was issued for much of West Texas into Thursday morning, including in the area where Tuesday's collision occurred. Presidio County reinstates burn ban by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBenSentinel.com. Presidio County. At last Wednesday's meeting, the Presidio County Commissioner's Court voted to reinstate the burn ban for the first time since September. Much-needed fall rains offered a few months of relief, but now Presidio County residents and landowners will once again be expected to contact the county for permission before setting outdoor fires. County Emergency Management Coordinator Gary Michke told commissioners that this is typically a dry and windy time of year. Coupled with an extra dry weather pattern across the Southwest over the past few years, local officials have reason to exercise caution. Presidio County has the power to extend or lift the burn ban every 90 days. Failure to comply with the ban can result in fines and criminal charges ranging from Class C misdemeanors to second-degree felonies, depending on whether fire damage was caused intentionally or unintentionally. Michke explained that he isn't a proponent of keeping the county under a perpetual ban. He feels it is important to discuss and lift the ban whenever possible so that residents have to pay attention to regulations and take them seriously. When we can, we should drop the ban so that people realize we don't just keep it in place automatically, he said. Winter and early spring of each year, long after the monsoon rains and while winds are high, are often considered wildfire season in the Big Bend. The latest burn ban will extend until April and includes the anniversary of the Rock House Fire in 2011, a wildfire that left a 314,444-acre burn scar so large it could be seen from space. Michke and other emergency management experts around the state use something called the Keach Byron Drought Index, KBDI. KBDI values take into consideration location, ambient air temperature, and the last 24 hours of rainfall. All of these factors can help local officials and climatologists understand the local risk of fire. Locally, Presidio, Brewster, and Culberson counties are considered at higher risk for wildfires on the KBDI scale. Presidio takes the prize. The average KBDI score for the county is 616, which is often associated with more severe drought and increased wildfire occurrence, per the Texas A&M Forest Service. Despite its regular place on the discussion docket at Presidio County Commissioner's Court, burn bans don't actually hinder that many activities under state laws. Residents in unincorporated areas without trash services can still burn household trash, and outdoor enthusiasts can still light fires for recreational or ceremonial purposes, in other words, bonfires and cooking fires. That doesn't mean that county residents ought to spark up during wildfire season just because they're legally allowed to. At the county's current KBDI value, any burning outdoor fuel can quickly spiral into intense, deep-burning fires with significant downwind spotting. Wildfires can take off with the toss of a smoldering cigarette out the window or parking a car with a hot exhaust system over dry grass. Under Texas law, any fire left unattended, which includes abandoning a fire pit, can come with hefty legal consequences. Folks who wish to set outdoor fires beyond the parameters of the law must contact the county. In a place as dry as the Big Bend, wildfires are serious business. "We've gotten lucky the past few years," said Mitchke, "but that luck could run out."
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, February 2nd, 2023. FSISD to receive $35 million for initial bond projects, by Nathan Hewer. The upcoming Fort Stockton ISD bond projects moved a step closer to becoming a reality on Monday at the district's regular meeting. The school board approved a construction manager at risk for the projects and moved forward with the first round of bond sale in the amount of $35 million. $25 million of the initial bond money will be strictly allocated for general educational facilities, and $10 million will be for the stadium and general athletic facilities. Superintendent Zamora said at Monday's meeting that the tax rate will not increase as a result of the bond sale, as previously promised. "We got some good news today despite the interest rates. We were able to get an interest rate of 3.85%, so not bad considering the way the interest rates are overall. And again, this is the first round of bond sales. It's $35 million out of the $100 million. We are staggering so that we could live up to our promise of not exceeding that $1.10 tax rate and working to try and lower that. If all goes as planned with the bond paperwork and it receives approval from the Attorney General, the $35 million will be received by the school district by February 28th. The bond sale coincides with the selection of a construction manager for the bond projects. BTC was approved by the school board as the project's construction manager. The Fort Worth-based company specializes in K-12 education construction and has provided services to Rankin, Pecos, along with many other districts across the state for over 40 years. BTC is exclusively a school builder. It's really all we do. Most of our work is performed as a construction manager at risk. These projects line up with exactly the type of work that we do," said Chris Louth, construction manager. BTC will now work with architects and different teams to determine what Fort Stockton ISD needs from the bond project. BTC will then present proposals for each project to the board with maximum dollar amounts. "We're not agreeing to anything per se right now, other than to say that we're looking at entering into negotiations with them to service our CMAR, and if approved, then in the future they'd be coming back to us with the projects in order to continue to pursue a specific project, like the field house, intermediate wing, etc. Once they undertake this role and have specifics, it would then fall on them to work locally with other contractors throughout to provide services and subcontract out." City Hears update on Blue Ridge Farms, by Sean Yorks. Fort Stockton is sitting on a potential gold mine of green energy, and BioCatters, an investment and management group looking to develop renewable fuels and energy sources that the city of Fort Stockton has contracted with, thinks a parcel of land the city owns is the perfect spot to become a revenue source for the city. Fort Stockton's quickly looking at becoming a power hub that's going to be a very green hub, Alex Gonzalez said. He gave an update to the city council on January 23rd. BioCatters thinks the location out there is a good energy hub, he said. The fact is that it belongs to the city of Fort Stockton is just beautiful. There are no other hubs like this within 100 miles. We just have to be reaching out to the right people. BioCatters is applying for a multitude of Department of Energy grants that will help with the development of the site. Gonzalez said BioCatters has learned a lot about the potential of the site over the last year. It's been interesting, a lot of learning exactly what the land's potential is. Water wells on the site have been registered, but no water is being drawn. The site is being used by oil and gas companies currently. He explained that it would cost $500,000 to get the infrastructure to farm on the site. I'm not saying that that's not ever going to happen. I can see potentially small portions of it being farmed out down the road. We've got a good handle with the oil and gas company that's out there, Forge Energy and Battalion Oil. We believe they will fix the roads and fix the gates. Forge wants to sell the water rights to Waterbridge, and I think it's a good thing for the city. Eventually, they're going to use that SWD out there, and they'll bring the water from other sources. BioCatters received a letter of intent from Vault Electricity, who wants to meet with Texas New Mexico Power and ERCOT for a substation that would take 18 to 24 months. We've always believed that being the meter service would be a better operation and potentially building a smart substation that will help alleviate some of the bottlenecks they have with existing solar substation. It's a very solar-focused area if they have the proper substation. BioCatters will continue to work with the city to develop the site and is expected to meet with the city again in March. Preliminary discussions underway for new T-ball fields by Nathan Hewer. In an effort to make quality of life better for area youth, Fort Stockton and FSISD are looking at developing two new T-ball fields this year. The ISD school board approved the superintendent to negotiate terms of agreement with the city, pending final approval of the board at the regular meeting on January 30. The purpose of this land would be for rec league play when practice is going on and sometimes games. The littles that are playing T-ball would be able to practice and do what they need to back there without interfering or delaying the start of other games. City Manager Frank Rodriguez explained that the idea derived from the City Council and their desire to improve the quality of life for area youth. The Council was looking at quality for life for kids, and we know baseball is a big component. A few years ago, it was originally talked about for the T-ball fields. It was brought up again to see what could possibly be done. The proposed project would be built behind the Martin Schuster fields, southwest of Alamo Elementary School, property that is currently owned by FSISD. Rodriguez said that the goal for completion of the two-field project would be before T-ball starts in the summer. Possibly next week we'll sit down and start the planning stages so we can include all those key people that want to be involved with the design and things to pitch to the engineer so we can get it going. It's ideal for us to be done by summer. In addition to the proposed turf fields, Fort Stockton hopes to build batting cages at the facility to provide an area for teams to warm up while waiting to play. A lot of baseball parks you go to now have those particular areas so that the kids can warm up and pitch, hit, and stay inside the net. We're going to look to get that done on those existing fields. There will be a concrete slab and netting.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, January 26th. Voters to decide on liquor by the drink in May election. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Meeting in regular session on Tuesday, the Monahan City Council unanimously approved the first reading of an ordinance to order a special election to allow the sale of liquor by the drink within the city limits. Currently, the city does not allow the sale of mixed beverages unless the establishment is a private club. According to the ordinance, the May 6th ballot will ask voters to answer for or against the question to legalize the legal sale of all alcoholic beverages, including mixed beverages. According to Texas Election Code, in order to call the election, a requester needs 35% of the registered voters who registered as voters in the city who also voted in the 2018 gubernatorial election to sign the petition. Mayor Adam Steen requested the petition pages from the city on October 14, 2022, in order to gather signatures for the local option election. Steen submitted the more than 700 collected signatures to city officials on December 13th. According to City Manager Rex Thee, quote, the petition needed 567 valid signatures for the council to order an election, and 712 were provided, end quote. City Secretary Tanya Todd was tasked with verifying 571 of those signatures. Todd told the council that she verified the signers' names, addresses, dates of birth, and effective voting date with the current city voter registry. Councilmember Jeppy Wilson asked Thee what would happen if the council did not vote to order the election. Quote, once a petition is verified, state law requires an election be held. If the council were to vote against ordering an election, I would suspect a lawsuit would ensue and the city would lose, Thee said. In 2020, Vinod N. Gandhi, owner of the new Fairfield Inn and Suites next to the Ward County Event Center, spoke briefly with the council about his plan on serving liquor by the drink in the bar of the new hotel. At the time, Gandhi explained, he was able to secure a beer and wine license from the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission, the TABC, but due to the sale of liquor by the drink being prohibited in Ward County, he thought an election making that distinction would be the best option. Gandhi needed 850 signatures on the petition, but was not able to collect the signatures in the time allotted. The other option was for Gandhi's bar to become a private club, which, he said, requires too much red tape. Voters will also be asked to adopt or reject certain proposed amendments to the existing city charter. Thee explained, quote, the city has been working on updating older language in the city charter, which is now outdated and no longer applies, end quote. There will be 7 amendments to the city charter on the ballot. Anyone wanting to review the amendments can visit the city's website or see them in the city secretary's office after February 14th. Also on the May 6th ballot is District 2 and 3 council seats, as well as the mayor. Currently, Jeppy Wilson represents District 2 and Calvin Carroll represents District 3. As of press time, Carroll was the only incumbent to file his intent to run for re-election. The deadline to file intent to run is February 17th. Early voting begins on April 24th and will run through May 2nd at City Hall. To receive a ballot by mail, applications must be received no later than April 25th. Encore easement approved for Pyote Park water well. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. The Ward County Commissioners Court met Monday morning for a short meeting. A quorum was established, the Pledge of Allegiance and invocation was given, and the court moved on to the agenda items. One of the items on the agenda to be discussed and approved was an electric line easement in Barstow, Precinct 4. Quote, we lost a casing in the big water well located at the park in Pyote and had to re-enter the casing and re-cement. It was a problem. Those water wells run off of natural gas. They have a V8 engine and are extremely loud and extremely complicated to deal with. This water well not only takes care of all our trucks, the tankers that take care of all our roads, and waters the park. It also provides water for the Pyote Wickett Fire Department, as well as the Wink and Barstow Fire Departments. I just want to simplify the situation there and switch to electric. In the long run, it will be a lot cheaper for us and a lot less maintenance on it. Encore needs a way to come from the back side of the park. They don't want to cross the road. It will be a roundabout way to get power to the well, but it will work. Right now, there is no power to the well, Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Naum said. The court approved the utility easement for power to the park well in Paiute. The court also acknowledged the continuing education for Precinct 3 Commissioner Dexter Nichols and Ward County Clerk Denise Valles. Ward Memorial Hospital Administrator Leticia Rodriguez gave the hospital financial report to the commissioners, although no action was required. Also approved by the court was payment of the county bills, which included Ward County Payroll Fund for $388,000, Grand Jurors Jury Fund totaling $4,000, Workers' Compensation for $26,000, Hospital Collection Expenses total $13,000, Precinct 1 Roads and Bridges in the amount of $49,000, Inter-County Juvenile Detention to Midland County for $7,900. In rapid succession, the court approved, without discussion, the following regular business, the previous meeting's minutes, county and hospital budget amendments, officers' reports, the treasurer's monthly and quarterly reports. Present at Monday morning's meeting was Precinct 2 Commissioner Larry Hanna, Precinct 3 Commissioner Dexter Nichols, Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Nelms, and Ward County Judge Greg Holly. Absent from the meeting was Precinct 1 Commissioner Tino Sanchez. The next regularly scheduled Commissioner's Court is scheduled for 9:30 a.m. February 13th at the Ward County Courthouse. Individuals who would like to address the court to ask questions or inform the commissioners of problems in their precinct or Ward County can call Judge Greg Holly at 432-943-3209, discuss their question or concern, and ask to be placed on the agenda for the next commissioners' meeting. Council reappoints Asbury as municipal court judge. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Monahan City Council members met for a lengthy agenda, and after establishing a quorum and approving previous minutes, the council considered agenda items such as first right of refusal to purchase airport hangar, MPD annual contact report, and code enforcement officer's report, and MOTRAN renewal. Topping the list was the appointment of municipal court judge, which was decided in closed session at the end of the meeting. After reconvening to open session, the council reappointed Judge Lori Asbury to another 2-year term. In other business, the city council members considered the city's first right of refusal to purchase Airport Hangar 12-7 from Britt Grigory. The hangars are privately owned, but on city land, so the city has first right of refusal before a hangar can be sold. Quote, Grigory received an offer from Quell Petroleum to purchase the hangar for $30,000, Thee said. He added, it would add no benefit to the city to own the hangar, so he suggested the council evoke the first right of refusal and let Quell Petroleum purchase the hangar. The motion passed unanimously. The council took note of 4 nuisance properties submitted by Director of Public Works Richard Covington, found to be in violation of Section 13-2 and/or 6-31 of the City Code of Ordinances, which is defined as cleanliness of premises and dangerous structures, respectively. Properties currently shown to be in violation are 518 West 14th Street, owned by Anthony Vasquez, 710 South Bruce, owned by Thomas Yantis, 707 South Bruce, owned by Porfirio Lopez, and 300 North Bruce, owned by Hector Garcia. Thee told the council the property on 14th Street burned some time ago and will need to be cleaned up or the city will pursue court action to condemn the property. The other three are in violation of weeds, and since the council took note of these properties, the council authorizes further action up to and including filing non-compliant cases with municipal court. In regular business, council members agreed to renew their silver membership with Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance, MOTRAN, for $1,000, based on City Manager Rex Thee's recommendation. In final actionable agenda items, Monahans Police Chief Christopher Quintana submitted the required racial profiling report for his department. Quote, "A review of internal records shows the department did not receive any complaints alleging racial profiling in 2022, Thee said. The full report is available to the public at any time, he added. The City Council meets every second and fourth Tuesday of the month at 3 p.m. Anyone wanting to address the City Council on the topics addressed in this story or any other topic may do so by asking to be added to the meeting agenda in the City Secretary's office located inside City Hall or by appearing at the meeting during the public comment section of the meeting, which is on every agenda. The Council will meet again on February 14th in the Council Chambers of City Hall, located at 112 West 2nd Street at 3 p.m. The meeting is open to the public. Search warrant nets suspected marijuana, cocaine, and two arrests on Tuesday. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Deputies with the Ward County Sheriff's Office executed a search warrant at a mobile home located at 800 East C Street in Monahans on Tuesday afternoon, which led to the recovery of marijuana, cocaine, and two arrests. According to Ward County Sheriff Ferran Valle, quote, "During the execution of the search warrant, a green leafy substance believed to be marijuana and a white powdery substance believed to be cocaine were found at the residence. The green leafy substance weighed over 4 ounces, but under 5 pounds. The white powdery substance weighed over 4 grams, but under 20 grams, end quote. According to county tax records, the property owner is listed as Alejandro Camacho. As a result of the operation, deputies subsequently arrested Randy Ronald Halsey Jr., age 22, of Wiggins, Mississippi, and Crandon Keishon Simmons, age 22, of McHenry, Mississippi. Both were charged with possession of marijuana more than 4 ounces, less than 5 pounds, a state jail felony, and possession of controlled substance penalty group 1, more than 4 grams, less than 200 grams, a second-degree felony. As of press time, no bond was posted, and the two remain in custody at the Ward County Jail. The case is still under investigation. Ramirez says the voices in her head told her to steal car. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Monahans woman was arrested after she told authorities she stole a car from a Dollar General parking lot early Tuesday morning because the voices in her head told her to. Monahans police officers responded to the call of a stolen vehicle from the Dollar General located at 1209 South Stockton around 5:48 a.m. According to Monahans Police Department Captain Stormy Laws, quote, "The owner was tracking the vehicle with GPS and told officers it was parked in the alley behind Southside Baptist Church," end quote. The owner used a cell phone left inside the vehicle to track where the vehicle was located after noticing it was missing. Once officers located the vehicle, they found 36-year-old Jenna Ray Ramirez of 1403 South Allen in the front seat, and when confronted by officers, she told them she'd heard voices in her head telling her to take the car. Quote, "Ramirez tried to resist arrest while officers were attempting to place her in cuffs, and during a search of her belongings, 4 syringes with a clear liquid substance inside was located," Laws said. "The liquid substance inside the syringes is suspected to be methamphetamine and total 36 grams, he added. Although police aren't certain how Ramirez got into the vehicle, quote, there was no indication of forced entry. It appeared as if the vehicle was left unlocked, Laws said. Ramirez was subsequently taken into custody at the Ward County Jail and charged with unauthorized use of a vehicle, possession of a controlled substance, penalty group 1, more than 4 grams, less than 200 grams, and resisting arrest. Law said this serves as a reminder to not only lock your cars, but also keep valuables out of sight. Seeing belongings in a car creates an opportunity for crime by a criminal. Ramirez's bond was set at $17,500.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.